Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 73 for December the 2nd, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through all this magical world of all things connected, be it switches, network, fiber optics, Cat 6, servers, and we're going to just talk about everything in that server rack that you have to deal with on a daily basis, in and out. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great tech shows at techpodcast.com. We're also now a member of Stitcher, so check out stitcher.com. It's a place where you can pick up this show, as well as many other podcasts out there. Tons of podcasts for you. You can download those shows on your smartphone, or you can stream them to your smartphone. So you can pick up that app anytime you wish and check out stitcher.com. Folks, please check out my website. That website is tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows, and you can also leave me voicemail. Yes, that's right, voicemail at 724-701-0550. Once again, that's 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, I would love to hear from you, and it always helps a podcaster when they're getting feedback from people out there just like you. You can give me feedback, and you can send it to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and as at Technoman. In tonight's show, we're going to be talking about, especially since, you know, this is key here, especially since Server 2003, we know, is going away. All the updates and everything are going away in July. So July of 2003. In July of 2015, we're going to be losing Server 2003 is going to be gone and no longer available to us. So what we're going to have to do here is we're going to have to talk a little bit about how we can bring this server and be able to migrate it over to a different platform. Now, before you do that, you're going to have to do what's called a migration planning phase. If you're running all 2003 servers right now, you need to work yourself up and start figuring out how you're going to migrate those servers over to 2008. Or I've been telling everybody to migrate now to 2012. And it's just, you know, I think it's just in the longevity of things. I think 2012 is going to be around a lot longer, obviously, than 2008. Because eventually you're going to be re-migrating. And now they're talking about bringing out another server platform. To me, Microsoft, I think server shouldn't be updated or revised maybe once every 5 years because we put so much, we're such stakeholders in the Microsoft ecosystem for our servers. I don't think that we need to be changing these servers every year like we do desktop operating systems. It's just not beneficial to the great technologists out there listening to this show. Now, let's talk a little bit about here. Before the migration document is created, the end state of the project has been documented in detail and agreed upon by the key stakeholders in your organization. So, folks, you're going to have to get a lot of people involved with this stuff that's not normally involved with it. And what I mean by that is you're going to have to sit down with your CEO, your CFO. Very important to have the financial people on board with your migrations, so they understand why we're migrating and why we have to change this stuff out. Now, there should not be any question as to exactly what the next evolution of the network will be composed of and what functionality it will offer. In addition, an estimated budget for the hardware and software required and an estimated timeline for the project has been identified. In some cases, depending on the size and complexity of the project, or whether outside consulting assistance has to be contacted or contracted, a budget has also been established for the implementation services. Now, I know we tend to, in our organization, we have in-house expertise to bring servers up online, as I'm sure you may have that also. And what I mean by that very simply is, look at your tech department and figure out who in that tech department that you can say, look, Ben, you're going to be worried about backing up all the users and data from, you know, the other servers, the old server 2003. Sally, you're going to be responsible for designing the new hardware we might have to purchase to implement 2008 or 2012 server, and get these people on board and start looking. If you have to contract outside of your organization, which a lot of times you do, you may have to contract outside of your organization. And if you have to do that, that's fine. That happens. Be prepared to spend some money. These folks, these people out there looking to come into your organization don't come cheap. And I have a philosophy on that. A lot of times, like when I'm hired out as a consulting service, I go out and I do the job. A lot of consultants out there, when they get into this, business of consulting, what they tend to like to do is they tend to want to do something such as be able to, hire people to come in and help you with your problem. Now, what you have there, if you're hiring me, you get me because people know my expertise. But some companies, if you hire them, they're going to charge you even more money, $200, $300, $400, $500 an hour, because they're paying some guy to come in to work for you. Maybe they're paying him $50 an hour. So they're going to make money as well as paying him. Now, there's a key component of the migration document is the project plan or migration plan that provides a list of tasks required to implement the solution. It is a roadmap from which the migration document is created. The migration document also provides a narrative where needed of the specifies of the tasks the project plan does not provide, and provides other details as outlined. Now, here's some key stuff to think about when you're bringing these plans into the realm of, you know, your CEO. The CEO is going to sit there and he's going to listen to you, but he or she will listen to you. And they're going to pay particular attention to a timeline. People want timelines. We get set upon all the time and they come to us and they say, look, what is the timeline of your project? What's the timeline of your summer projects? Summer projects are easy. We have 2.5 months to implement whatever we're implementing in the summer. But that's in the education realm. If I'm working for one of my clients in a doctor's office, they may want to know, Jack, what's the timeline to bring my server back up online so I can do my medical record and medical billing again? And I would have to come to them and say, look, this is what the timeline's going to be. So now the primary stepping stones needed to reach the end point have been sketched out in the discovery process. And the collaboration sessions or design discussions have all taken place. The project plan in the migration document provides a tool to complement the design document, which generally illustrates the process of building and testing the technologies required and outlines who is doing what during the project. Now, once you have that set up, you have to start thinking about the organization skills of your people. Now, the dates and the duration should be included in the project plan, using the basic concepts of starting with the end date when everything needs to be up and running and then working your way backwards. It is important to include key milestones, such as acquiring new software and hardware, sending administrative resources to training classes. You may have to train people, such as sending them over to my online courses for Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2012, so they can get beefed up and be ready to go when that new server comes available. Also, provisioning the new data and any new circuits that you might have to design for that data or for that path for your actual servers and your switches. Slack time should also be included for unexpected events or stumbling blocks that might be encountered. Each phase of the project needs to be outlined and then expanded upon. Now, you know, you don't know everything that's going to happen when you're implementing this stuff. It just doesn't happen. Now, what I mean by that is that things will happen. Let's say, for instance, if Joe is going to be implementing the Active Directory rollover, they're going to be taking the Active Directory from the 2003 structure, and they're going to be taking that directory structure and pulling it into your new domain environment with your 2012 or 2008, either one. What has to happen at that point is they're going to have to be able to leave time open in case Joe gets sick. Wonder if Joe takes a day off. And, you know, those are some of the unexpected events that's going to happen in your migration phase. We don't all the time plan for that, though. We don't always say, look, we're going to plan for that and we're going to know exactly how that's going to work. But we do want to be prepared for something like that going down. A good rule of thumb is not to try to list every task that needs to take place during the phase. I agree with some of that, and I don't agree with some of that. Because when we try to roll out a summer project, we start with the date when we're going to be reopening our organization, and we kind of work back. We start taking care of the big things in the beginning, and then you start narrowing down, like, what can you do on a server with your users on that server? This can be hard in some organizations, but sometimes, such as this, let's say, for instance, if you work for a finance office, a business office, and you know the least amount of stuff they do is maybe the least amount they do is printing. So you may be able to roll that print server out on your new server last and maybe roll the Active Directory out first so they can log in and authenticate. So that's kind of those rule of thumbs that you're going to have to figure out along the way. Let's see. A good rule of thumb is to, not list every task, so be careful with that. But you have to allow every task to have so many hours per day, because there's so many hours per day of work, and there's only so many work days per week. Too much detail is put into the project plan. It quickly becomes unmanageable. Now, we're going to have to also talk a little bit about that. Who's going to manage this overall plan? It can't be just the guy writing it. You have to have a couple stakeholders in this plan. And what I mean by that very simply is just that. You have to be able to have these people prepared to roll this plan out and prepared to have it ready to go. Now, with that said, let's go ahead and move on here. So the next thing we're going to have to do is we're going to have to start working a little bit about the plan should also, okay, let's go into this. The plan should also assign resources to the tasks that start to define the terms that will work on the different components of the project. If an outside organization is going to assist you in the process, it should be included at the appropriate points in the project. Microsoft Project offers an additional wealth of features to produce reports and graphical information from this plan. They prove extremely helpful when the work starts. Also, accuracy budgeting information can be extracted, which can take into account over time and after hour rates and easily give what-if scenario information. Now, speed versus risks. And this is something that we come across all the time in our organization is we tend to always want to be more speedy than doing things right. And then we have to go back and maybe have to redo something later. We try not to do that in our organization because I don't have the time offered later to say, look, I'm going to shut the servers down and redo this because it's not quite right. I don't have that kind of time, and I'm sure you probably don't have that kind of availability either. But folks, this migration is happening, and I looked up the stats of how many companies out there are still running Server 2003, and I just shook my head and said, why? I mean, we've been running Server 2008 now for several years, and, you know, now we're starting to even bring in some in 2012 servers just to start getting them into the mix. But the project plan also enables you to test what-if scenarios. When the high-level tasks are defined and the resources required to complete each task is also defined, you can easily plug in external contractors to certain tasks and see how the cost can change. After-hours work might take place during work hours in certain places. If the timeline still is not acceptable, tasks can be stacked so that multiple tasks occur at the same time instead of one after the other. Be careful with this. When you start overlapping tasks, what I found in my many, many years of doing this is you start to take a little bit away from one and give a little bit more to the other, or give a little bit more to the other and take away from the one. Not a good scenario. Very poor judgment on the part of the key administrator who is setting this plan into effect. Now, the critical path of the project should also be defined. Certain key events need to take place for the project to proceed beyond a certain point. Ordering the hardware and having it arrived is one of these steps. Getting stakeholder approval on the lab environment and providing the key network applications can be supported might be another. Administrative and end-user training might need to happen to ensure that the resulting environment can be effectively supported. I don't always live by the rule of labs, because in my experience, let me back up a minute. Whenever we're running updates, we like to run our updates on a test computer. The reason that is you want to make sure that the software is compatible with everything Microsoft is doing with their updates. Sometimes you'll find that an update will break something else. That's a bad scenario. But most times you'll find that it will work fine. In a server environment, it's just hard. I guess when you're building the server, make sure your applications are going to run on that server. That makes sense. But you can't put a test load on a server and the hardware if it's a lab environment. So many technologists out there in the world today get so caught up with this lab environment stuff, and they want to build a lab and build virtual and make it, see if it works. Well, that can't always work to your benefit. I mean, I understand where, it comes off where it sounds like a good idea, but I try to stay away from the lab environments. Don't, build a test lab and then roll it out. I'm more of one of those guys that like to roll it out, and then the test will be the overall stress of the network itself, and allow that to actually involve into your stress testing of your server in preparing it. Folks, there's a lot of resources on the internet that will tell you how to build a server, how to design a server. If you call these companies, we deal a lot with CDW and Dell. If you call them, their engineering department will say, how many users do you have? How many simultaneous connections will you have on that server? They have a whole list of stuff that they can key in on and help you with questions that you don't even have in your head right now. They will help you design and build a server that's going to be right for your organization, and they will set you up with that server. Now, creating the migration document. The migration document can now narrate the process detailed in the project plan. The project plan does not need to be 100% complete, but the order of the steps and the strategies for testing and implementing will be identified. Generally, the migration document is similar to the structure of the design document, a reason why many organizations combine the two documents, but the design document relates the design decisions made and details the end statement of the upgrade, whereas the migration document details the process and the steps that are taken. Now, here's the following is a sample table I'm going to give you. You can write these down. If you're in your car, that's okay. Maybe I'll type this up and put it in the show notes, or listen to this later and get your pen and paper out and write these down. But this is a sample table of the contents for the migration document. First, we have the executive summary. The executive summary is just something that's written up, and it's between you, the technologist, and your executive staff, okay, your CEOs, your administration staff, or whoever, that everybody is buying into this thing. So it's kind of a summary of what's going to happen. The goals and the objects of the migration process, stuff we just talked about. Goals we're going to have, timelines, objects, what's going to happen. The background, write a little bit of the background stuff up about what's going to happen and how we're going to roll this thing out. The risks and the assumptions. Now, risks is just that. What can happen? What may happen? What may happen is maybe the Active Directory won't migrate over, and maybe you'll have to type all your users back in by hand. That's a possible risk. and the assumptions. What are you assuming that will happen with this migration? You know, we're going to be more up to date. We're going to be more current. We're going to have more current security patches. You know, that's some of the assumptions that's going to happen. The roles and the responsibilities that we talked about. Who's doing what? Who's responsible for what? And how is those roles and responsibilities going to be handled on a day-to-day basis? The timelines and the milestones we talked about. The timelines is just that, is what is the timeline going to be? When is the server going to be implemented? When did we order it? When's it coming into the office? When are we going to rack it, you know, get it in the server rack? And when are we going to start loading the, you know, hopefully you're going to load virtual servers on this thing. But anyway, when are you going to load the server software? And then the milestones, where should you be at any given point of any day? The training plan. This is huge because you're implementing a training plan based on, very simply, training the people that's going to be using the server. And not only using the server, you may have to train your end users, the people using your workstations. You probably won't have to with the server migration, because when they log in, they're going to see the Windows login on the domain just like they always have. It really hasn't changed at all. Unless you're one of those people that want to migrate over and you're using Windows 8, and we know that looks a lot different. But, you know, most of the time, the training should be straightforward. Again, you can send them, and you can send your people over to my training site at, it's classroom.jackstechhorn.com, and let them join one of those classes on there and allow your company to pay for that for them. It works out really, really well. The migration process. So we're talking migration process about hardware and software procurement process. So how do we buy it? How do we order it? And you should know that with your company. You should know whatever red tape you have to go through. The next thing is the prototype proof of concept process. And then we're going to talk about server configuration and testing. Now, I do recommend when we bring a new server up online, especially if it's a new domain controller. So you may migrate your old domain over. But, you know, a lot of times when we bring up new servers, we'll bring up a brand new domain name and we'll change everybody over to that new domain. The reason I like to do it that way is it gives me the opportunity to test it. As my users are still logging into the old domain and getting their resources, my new domain server is also running and they're not talking to each other. I don't set them up so they talk to each other, but I do allow it to hit the same file servers and everything and do the file shares. The reason I do that is because that's my implementation and my process of stress testing. I put myself and my technical staff on the new server. We start logging into it, check the logins, check the speed of the server, and we start using the server. And then maybe 3 days to a week later, I bring on some of the staff members onto the new server. This also gives us the time to go around and set people up on the new domain without having to throw everybody on it the same day. And I can, you know, gradually roll that out to all my users. In the end, once I have everybody on, all the logins are working day to day in, day out, and that's my stress test, I can then go, and once I'm sure everything is off the old server and nothing's connected to the old domain, I can down that domain and get rid of it. So that's my process. Now, yours can be a little different. Desktop configuration and testing is what we were just talking about, getting those people onto your new domain controller. Documentation required from the prototype. So maybe you want to begin documenting that server. There's a really good way that a lot of technologists out there document their servers. And I learned this a long time ago from an old server guy. Whenever he would upgrade a server or run a patch on the server or do something to the server, what he liked to do was put just a simple notepad file on the server desktop. And you would open that up. He'd put the date in there and he'd put what he did. Now, what this allows you to do is anybody from your technical staff that remotes into that server will see that notepad file on there, or that text file, be able to open it and know what's going on with that server from, you know, update to update to update. Yes, it's a little bit of work, but it's a great great way to document what's going on with that actual server. The pilot phases detailed. I don't really pilot phase stuff. I don't do that lab stuff. I don't do that kind of testing. But if you're saying this is a pilot, then you're going to be doing that detailed on there in the pilot phases. The migration upgrade detailed. So, you know, start working with that, with another document about your migration and your upgrade. In that document, put in there key dates, key timelines that you're hitting. So this document is a work in process. As you're doing each step of the way, you're actually putting this together and you're building this document out with each one. And then you can compare that with your actual document that you started at the beginning of this process to say, yeah, the migration document and the timelines are hitting exactly where we thought they would, and everything's good to go. The support phase detailed. Now, the support phase is you're supporting your end users, and you want that phase going on at some point. And then the support documentation detailed. We always have to have that documentation, right? That's such key in our line of work. Now, the budget estimates, a couple key things you're going to put on your table for the budget estimates. The first thing that you're going to look at the top is the labor cost for the prototype phase. And, you know, it takes money. I had a CEO once, and he used to want me in a meeting, you know, a couple times a week with him. We'd sit and we'd talk about this, you know, servers, computers, networks, whatever, and what my plans were in the future and what we wanted to do. But as he wanted to talk about that each week, I found that that was counterproductive, because your technical staff needs to be out there and needs to be working on this stuff. We don't need to be sitting around an office discussing about what might happen when we can be making it happen. I think that's key. So only have your key people that you need to talk about the prototype phase, some of this planning stuff. You don't want to pay a bunch of techs to sit around a room and just listen. They're not going to be giving you a lot of input anyway if you're the administrator. You, as the administrators, the technologist, can go back and sit with your team, you know, occasionally as you're working, and say, hey, Bob, what do you think about a server? You know, if we have, you know, 4 Xeon processors, 32 gigs of RAM and solid state drives, do you think that would make a good server? And, you know, talk about it as you're doing other jobs. Get their input so they have buy-in with your project, but you don't need them sitting around. You don't want to pay them to sit around on an hourly rate to just listen to something. The labor costs of the pilot phase, if you have that lab environment, you got to pay people to test it out and run it. That's totally up to you. Again, I don't do that. The labor cost of the migration and the upgrade phase, you do need this written in your budget estimates, because you have to have labor to migrate and you have to have labor to upgrade. That's what it takes. It takes people. I call it boots on the ground, right? The old military strategy. Boots on the ground. And, you know, there's a couple of things they teach in the military. There's three main things you got to do: shoot, move, and communicate. If you're shooting and you're on the move, and then you have to communicate with somebody about where you're at in case you need a little bit of help or assistance. Same thing here about migration and upgrade, right? We're shooting it in there. We're putting the servers together. We're moving, because we're moving in the proper direction of our timeline. And we're going to communicate this back to the CEO and the administration and management, or whoever you're working for, about what's going on at any given time. So shoot, move, and communicate. The labor cost for support phase. The labor cost for the support phase. If there is a labor cost, you know, if it's your own staff, you still figure that in. There's hours per day that support staff is going to be supporting your end users. The cost of training is one of those other things. There's a cost to train people, and you'll have to remember how that training is set up and how much training somebody's going to need. You can kind of predetermine that, but you can't always predetermine every given hour. I suggest when you do cost of training, do blocks of time. Say, look, we're going to work with the secretarial staff 10 hours and figure out your labor cost. We're going to work with the finance staff maybe 5 hours. Maybe that's all they need. So you figure out that total cost. If you go over that, that's okay. You're going over budget by a little bit. That's all right. But at least have just a nice block in there. But don't think in your head when you're trying to get this stuff, you know, approved by a board of directors for your company. Don't lowball this stuff. Don't go in there and say, look, we think the training cost is pretty, you know, minute. We're going to train. If you're thinking in your head 10 hours and you tell them 3 to lowball it, you know, I think you're hurting yourself. You have to be very on the up and up with this stuff, because when you go way over budget, that's when people start really, really getting concerned with you. So you want to try to hit and be right within that budgetary numbers. Now, and then the last thing you do, as we talked about over and over again, is the project schedule. So the executive summary section, The executive summary should set the stage and prepare the audience for the document that everybody is going to sign off on, and we should all be ready to go with that for the executive summary, as we talked about earlier. So, folks, rolling out and migrating, you know, doesn't even have to take everything I told you tonight. This is just a really nice plan to kind of get everything on paper and say, look, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and this is when we're going to do it. But, you know, sometimes a migration to Server 2012 or 2008 can be as simply as building another virtual server and slowly bringing that server back up online. And I'll be the first to tell you, in the world of technology, we don't document everything. And I know when you go to school, we have a local college here that we do a lot of work with, and they teach their kids from day one, document, 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 document. But as I said before, if you're spending all your time documenting it, you're probably not doing the work. And sometimes I've met the best documentation people in the world in this field, and they can't do the work. Those are the people that will write this plan and then hire somebody come in to build their servers. I'm kind of the opposite of that. I'd rather build a server, and then I'll write it up later and tell you what I did to build the server. And so I can document, but I usually like to do it in the latter side than the previous side. But I can tell you, though, for budgeting, we always budget prior. You can't do a job. You can't do anything unless you're budgeting prior to the whole entire, thing here going on, because you will never, ever be able to do any of this unless you have the money. So hopefully that helps you out tonight. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed this show tonight. I hope we're able to put a few thoughts in your head. I'm still working up some key components here. I'm supposed to be doing a interview with one of the key components, the president of the OEM of Microsoft. We're going to be talking about Server 2003 migrating, and we're going to be talking about some of those key concepts. And between myself and his executive assistant, we're trying to drill down some time so we can set this interview up and get it recorded for you folks, because he wanted to be on the show. And that is really, truly, really humbling for me to have that conversation with Microsoft, that they want to be on this show and be part of the Tips from the Server Room. Folks, if you can do anything in your life, I know it's the holiday season, please remember to use my Amazon link. Every month I get this great little email from Amazon that says, we are sorry, you have not made the minimum requirement for us to give you a check. And it's heartbreaking, because I know there's so many of you out there listening to this show, and all it takes is, if you're going to buy from Amazon, if you're buying something for work, if you're buying a switch for somebody, or if you're buying a bar of soap, go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Make sure you shut your ad blocker off, and then use that Amazon link. Just click on that. It will take you right to Amazon. You buy anything, I get a small proceeds back to the show to help us out here. I tried one of the Patreon campaigns, and I know a lot of you guys are struggling out there as technologists, and you know, we're probably not the multimillionaires of the industry or of the world. And I tried to take donations, but nobody donated, so I just killed the campaign. But this, you're buying from Amazon anyway, why not use my link as opposed to anybody else's out there? And this is another big thing. I'll give you this one. If you want to learn Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi Server from install to administration, sign up for one of my online classes. We talked a lot about training tonight. Folks, continued education, continued training in this business is key between you being a run-of-the-mill technologist or you being one of the kingpins. When new stuff comes out, you have to learn it. My wife all the time says, why do you keep buying all these books? Why do you keep taking these online classes? And because I want to be the very, very best in the field that I can be. So take one of these online courses. You can find those at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the page. The courses are self-paced, folks. Just watch a video and take a 2 or 3 question quiz. Once you finish it up, I will mail your certificate, which is good for framing. It's also beneficial to have a certificate because you can show it to your employer. Most employers will refund you the money for it. They will pay you back for that training. Once again, you can sign up for those classes at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Folks, I hope everybody had a great holiday weekend. If you celebrate that in your part of the world, we had Thanksgiving here in the States. It was just this past Thursday. And yep, I ate totally too much. But you know what? Hey, that's what you're supposed to do on the holidays, right? And if you're celebrating the holiday season here, Christmas coming up, hopefully you got some of your lights and your tree and your decoration up there and ready to go. Folks, I want to thank you so much once again for joining me here each Tuesday for these shows, for downloading and subscribing. I truly appreciate it. For those of you out there that normally would watch the YouTube video, I did not create a video tonight because we're doing some work here in the studio. So I just wanted to do the audio podcast as we always do on Tuesdays. So folks, have a great work week, and I hope you keep all those servers running smoothly, your switches and your network gear going, VLANing and getting everything ready there for this new year coming up. And I'll talk to you next Tuesday here for another Tips from the Server Room. Take care, my friends, and I'll see you then. Bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.